The federal government's investing $3.5 million in a healthy masculinities project trial. The aim is to eliminate violence against women and children by fostering healthier masculinity in boys. And one man who spent quite a bit of time in Canberra over the past couple of weeks talking to key stakeholders about preventative frontline programs is friend of the show, Hunter Johnson, who's the founder of The Man Cave, which tackles young men's emotional health. Hunter, thanks for joining us again. What are we talking about when we talk about healthy masculinity in boys?
Thanks so much, Josh, and great to be back with you. And yeah, just thanks for the role you're playing in just continuing to elevate this message. I think we're at such a crunchy time for everything to do with masculinity right now. And I think we only need to look at recent headlines, particularly around men's violence against women. That's just dominated the news in recent times in a really tragic way, but also the men's suicide statistics as well, which are increasingly becoming more common. So we're on average about 7 Aussie men taking their life every day alongside more than one woman every week being killed through male perpetrated violence. And what I've been doing, kind of hitting the pavement down in Canberra, speaking to a number of different MPs, really trying to garner their support to invest in this phrase, which has kind of hit the zeitgeist, which is healthy masculinity, which is a little bit of a buzzword, but it's really come out of the whole movement of toxic masculinity, which I'm sure many people have heard. And I know, Josh, you and I share similar sentiments that phrase is probably does more damage than it does good or calling people into the conversation. But really, when we talk about healthy masculinity, it's characterized by equality and respect, nonviolence, reflection and self-awareness, emotional expression and vulnerability, and ultimately accountability at the bottom. And for me, that really looks like creating spaces with the 60,000 teenage boys that we work with at Man Cave to have safe spaces to really take off the mask they wear and start to look at some of the conditioning that they've inherited, whether it's through their family setting, whether it's through media or online media, and start to look at their values and their behaviors and kind of evolve into the young man that they want to be, not just for themselves, but for their relationships and their communities too.
I'm glad you mentioned suicide as well, Hunter, because I mean, one reason why I'm particularly interested in your take on this subject and why I'm interested in how we think about masculinity generally is because I want to avoid us from falling into the lazy trap of thinking that there's masculinity on one side and femininity on the other, and that all the bad expressions of masculinity are somehow intrinsic to being a man. On the text line, Jen texts in saying, there's no such thing as toxic masculinity. It's become a lazy catchphrase. Moderating aggressive or controlling behaviour is not gender biased, says Jen. Being a good male is not behaving more like a female, whatever the media thinks a female should be. The strong woman ideal can be used to justify aggression and control as well. There's too much to cover just here, says Jen on the text line. It's important to make the point that whenever we're talking about the victims of male violence, males are also victims of male violence. Males do themselves enormous harm as well. So the path out of this is not, you know, to benefit one sex over another, but to benefit everybody.
Couldn't agree more. And I think we have to hold the nuance of this conversation as we move through it. And I think with phrases like toxic masculinity, already it creates a divide. And I think it just pushes people, particularly the people that we want to invite into this conversation, to even further onto the fringes. And yeah, that's why I think if we can think about the language that we use almost from a branding or a marketing perspective, you know, the words we use create the worlds that we then step into. And I see there's a huge opportunity to call men through a really positive environment to step into this next generation of what does masculinity mean in 2023. As we know, as Josh, you and I have talked about many times, that the it's uncharted territories at the moment. And I think what we don't want to do at all is say that we need to throw all our favorite masculine traits with the bathwater. This is absolutely about keeping what is working, what is, you know, fundamentally universal principles of being a good person, and also looking at what are some of the behaviors that we need to evolve out of. And really what we see is a massive, massive gap is a lack of investment, particularly in teenage boys and their emotional development and the role models that surround them. And I think when we've seen the breakdown of society, whether it's, you know, town halls or community settings or churches or synagogues or mosques or wherever it may be that we used to go to congregate in mass to be surrounded by diverse role models, we're just really not seeing that anymore. And so we see a generation now of teenage boys who are really feeling left behind. And from that, there's isolation, there's loneliness, and aggression can form. So it's so, so important that we continue to have this conversation that investing in teenage boys is not just about the teenage boys. Yes, we can help them to live happier and healthier lives, but ultimately it has a massive ripple effect on society, in their relationships, in our families, in our communities, in our workplaces, all the way up to the leadership roles that, you know, men take in society.
1-300-222-702 is the phone number. If you'd like to join the conversation about constructive masculinity, healthy masculinity, especially among young men and boys, if you have a young male in your life, how do you try to communicate what's great about masculinity and what that person should aspire to that turns down the volume on what you might call toxic masculinity and turns up the volume on healthy masculinity? It's 13 minutes to 3, and Hunter Johnson, the founder of The Man Cave, is with us. Kevin in Maitland, what do you reckon?
Well, I go back to when I was a lad. My father, and I'm in my mid-70s now, and when my brother and I started to take girls out, he sat us down. He didn't give us any direction on what we should do, but he just wanted to remind us that the girl we were taking out was someone's sister and someone's daughter, and that one day they would most likely be someone's mother and someone's wife, and he wanted us to treat them as we would want our mother, our wife, and our daughter and our sister treated. And I always thought that it was good advice, bearing in mind that it's 60 years old, that advice, but I certainly passed it on to my son.
Thank you, Kevin. Lovely to hear from you. On the text line, Hunter, Nathan says, we can't just focus on men alone. Violence is violence. Women do commit it against their husbands. Some husbands are good men and some husbands are too good and they don't fight back, in which case they're the ones being abused as a result. A woman's abuse can be emotional, this Nathan writes, and controlling, particularly when it comes to threats about limiting access to kids. Tim says, this guy is terrific, meaning Hunter. Our then teenage daughter heard him speak and it gave her a much better understanding of the opposite sex at a time when the media was full of often justified negativity. Please pass on our thanks. So there you go, a little hat tip to you, Hunter. Sarah's on the line from Bomaderry. What do you reckon, Sarah?
G'day, Josh.
Hi.
I work in a diverse workplace with men and women of all ages, some with disabilities, some without disability. I'm on the former spectrum, vision impairment and all that. I wonder whether this is simply about getting back to the, I hate to use the word core values, it's such a buzzword, of common human decency, courtesy and respect. I work with a young man in his mid-20s who is well-mannered, patient, kind, fair, while having expectations about the way others around him comport themselves, and simply by being himself has been an exemplar of behaviour, and I'm finding myself becoming a better person working alongside him in my early mid-50s. And it's just beautiful to watch, and genuineness and authenticity to oneself comes into it as well. Mm. And as you mentioned, I agree with you 100% that common human face-to-face regular social interaction and the atomization of society, I think, are real root causes. And I think there's a generation of, to coin a phrase, lost boys out there who don't know what they're supposed to be, who are vilified by the louder, more acrid voices in the press on both sides of the political aisle, so to speak, left and right. Mm. But gentle, genuine, common human decency, courtesy and respect, manners.
Thank you for the call, Sarah.
Thank you so much.
Lovely to talk to you. Lovely to hear from you. On the text line, Hunter, one person says, women can use emotional and verbal violence, which never seems to get mentioned. But another person says, I'm a female domestic violence survivor of a male perpetrator. What a load of bollocks saying that people are violent. It's not a people problem. Stop minimizing male violence towards women. Men have a problem. Own it. Women can't turn down the volume on male violence until it is dealt with properly. Hunter, a perfect example of completely missing the point. I don't think anyone said that we should turn down the volume on male violence in the way that that person is interpreting it, but that we're likely to achieve less male violence if we give young males an understanding of masculinity that is a non-violent one.
Absolutely. I think in a sentence, the hypothesis is if we can invest in the emotional development of teenage boys to understand their inner worlds, aka what goes on in moments of positivity, but also in times of rejection or in times of trauma or emotional response that'll lead to a negative outcome for all involved. We have to start to invest into that. And I think at the bottom of the barrel, absolutely common, you know, respect and decency is at the bottom, but it's also a complete lucky dip to grow up in a family environment that uses language like values and character traits and common decency. And I can just tell you that now from the time we've had in the ring with 60,000 teenage boys now, it's a rare, rare thing. And I think that's not to make comment just on the parents, but it's an invitation for all of us. I think, you know, we're in this time now where we live in such individualized societies, and as a world trying to adjust to that, we know the answer is in community, and the power of a community is that different people play different roles in a community. So when a teenager is 12 to 16 years old, they break away from their parents, they test their identity, they test authority, they test boundaries. And traditionally, that is where the community comes in to offer certain lessons, morals, values, stories that are relevant to a teenager at that point in life that the traditional parent unit can't offer. And I think we have to come back to what's our collective responsibility to leave behind a better world for the next generation coming through. And that's tricky when, you know, so many parents are having to work so much. You have both parents needing to be in a workforce, if you have a home environment where both parents are there, to contribute to the system so that you can afford the cost of living. So this really is a multifaceted issue that requires a systemic intervention. But the lowest hanging fruit is for us to go early intervention and prevention with teenage boys. And the challenging thing about this, and, you know, I can tell you this from my meetings in Canberra this week, is prevention is not sexy to fund, and it's really tragic. It's much sexier and it's much more conducive of a 3-year election cycle to fund a crisis, because, as we know, there's a great saying in politics, never waste a crisis. There's always an opportunity there. And I think that's really the role that I've tried to agitate and play for, and in the respective meetings I'm having with MPs and senators and you name it. It's just like, we can't keep going down this way, because ultimately these are the boys who are going to be running society or be involved in society, and it'll be a massive, massive issue for the next generation coming through.
1-300-222-702 is the phone number if you have a contribution to offer about fostering healthy masculinity. Hunter Johnson is with us, the founder of The Man Cave, as the federal government announces a $3.5 million Healthy Masculinities Project to try to eliminate violence against women and children and foster healthy masculinity in boys. Annie in Western Sydney says, my sons have been raised by me as a single mum and are amazing men. My youngest has internalized a message that I didn't realize. He saw himself as the problem in a relationship and didn't realize that he was a domestic violence victim. He stayed in a coercive relationship and was cut off from friends and family. A balanced message is so important, says Annie. Louise in Coogee says, I'm a grandmother of a boy and have raised a son of my own and have taught hundreds of teenage boys in high schools and young adult men in universities. One of the key issues I've observed, writes Louise, is many fathers want to be their son's friend and not their parent. Parenting of boys takes a lot of time, and dads are often not present in their sons' lives to set boundaries, model respect, and have those incidental conversations. That's interesting, Hunter, the phenomenon of trying to be your son's friend.
Yeah, absolutely. We definitely see that play out, and I think also social media plays a really interesting role in this too, in this desire for status and to seem young. And I think, you know, culturally there's this whole seduction in maintaining youth, which, you know, seemingly has been there for time on end. But, you know, I do think there really needs to be a clear boundary of the parent first and foremost. Their responsibility is to be a parent, and the earning of respect from your child is like the number one goal. Also followed by, if your child has any situation, you want to be the first person that they call. And I think it's really important that we start to foster that psychological safety and trust in the home environment from as young as possible. And that's things like, you know, if parents make mistakes, powerfully owning those mistakes and explaining the impact and what they're going to do differently. We know that young people are very, you know, often told what to do, but young people, we, you know, people, I should say, are creatures creatures of habit. We do what we see and we mimic. We're creatures of mimicry. And the littlest moments often become the foundational building blocks for character development. So I think, yeah, to your point, Josh, absolutely it needs to be role modeled in the home. And that's just the tricky time we're in where the parents are being pulled out into the workforce or for whatever reason, you know, the family unit isn't the same, or there might be, you know, a breakdown that's happened, and then there's the trauma between the parents playing out. It now needs to become bigger than just the parents' pain. It actually becomes about how do we raise the next generation. And ultimately, I fundamentally believe we have a moral obligation as elders or olders in the community to leave behind a better world than what we inherited. And at the moment, all of us needs to really start to look at that, because we're in, you know, there's a multitude of or a multifaceted issues that are impacting the next generation, and they're really starting to struggle.
Let's take a quick call from Mary. Mary, we have less than a minute left, but what did you want to say? Hey, Mary.
Hi. I was just going to let you know my son wrote a play with two of his peers when he was in his HSC year called Boys Will Be Boys, and it was all about listening to their sisters and their girlfriends and other female friends about their experience with violence and reinterpreting it as a kind of a, you know, a short play, and it was just terrific to see how creatively they could understand what position females were in and how they might be able to help.
Good on him. Thanks for telling us about it, Mary, and thank you, Hunter, as always. Great to talk to you.
Thank you so much, Josh, and thank you again just for the role you've played in elevating what we're doing. It's rare and it's really appreciated.
No worries. My pleasure. That's Hunter Johnson, the founder of The Man Cave, which tackles young men's emotional health and intelligence.